What's up, Polo people? Welcome to another long-awaited edition of the Northside Polo Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin, here with my friends and my teammates. We got Liam.
Ayo.
And Alex.
Hey, what's up? What took so long?
I mean, like, we just been hella busy, guys. You know what I mean.
Yeah, we've been playing polo.
Yeah,
we're not just talking about it. We're playing
polo,
it.
Other projects, all kinds of stuff going on in our lives during the summer, and it just makes it hard to match our three schedules together.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I feel like our podcast chat has been like, the last month has just been one of us constantly saying, hey, are you two around? Can we do this thing? I'm free on these days, and then inevitably we're not all free on those days.
I mean, I think, yeah, we could not be in more different sync, I think, because like Gavin works the 9 to 5. I know, Gavin, you're available all the time. It's summer.
Well, in the summer, yeah, I'm not working right now, but yeah. I mean, I have polo on nights when Montreal doesn't have polo.
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing.
And that's polo, like, just makes offset. It tough.
Toronto doesn't have polo, though.
Toronto's been playing, actually. The funny thing is we've been doing Monday nights, which doesn't line up very, like, that's sometimes when you guys are around. Mm-hmm. That's like the one night that we've been getting regular polo, but I mean, yeah, we're trying to work it out. Sorry for all of our, you know, eager listeners that we've denied.
They're like, yo, I'm coming to Toronto. And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Well, should we get to the news then?
For sure.
Okay. We're going to
start. Yeah, we got like a month to make up on.
It's true. Yeah. So we're going to start the news off with really a tragic note. I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast is probably well aware of this by now, but Kevin Walsh, one of the giants of bike polo, especially in its early days, passed away just last week as of recording this. He was tragically killed by a car while walking with some friends, leaving behind his wife and two daughters. And it's been a massive blow to the bike polo community, not only in Northsides where Kevin Walsh lived and played, but also across, you know, the continent and the world. He did so much for this game. It can't be overstated. Founded the League of Bike Polo, which is really where so much of the game we play now was built and developed based on the conversations that were had there. And I guess kind of what we've been seeing the past week through social media and conversations with friends has been just an outpouring of, you know, people sharing their stories and memories of their time with Kevin. And the common thread is that Kevin was the kind of person that really listened and cared for those around him and cared deeply for bike polo. So this is a massive blow, and I think, you know, he'll be greatly missed by everyone involved in our game, and is more than anyone else, his family, right? Mm-hmm. That's the saddest part of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. I never met Kevin, of course. I think he was probably retired by the time I started playing from bike polo, but I've always heard about League of Bike Polo, and I've hopped on there a few times because you can still like look at the archives. And yeah, it was a huge site for like organizing bike polo before Facebook. I guess it was the thing that you would go to and you'd talk, and it was like hugely important. And yeah, from reading it, what everyone has to say, like he seemed like an incredible person, and it's just really sad. And yeah, all the best to his family and friends. It's just too sad.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say. Everyone, you know, there's been lots of conversations around the Toronto club, and like I think everyone grieves in their own way, and there's definitely a lot of grieving going on right now.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, in Ottawa, like, we played pickup last week and kind of everyone found out, and it was a very somber and sad evening, for sure. I mean, the impact Kevin had on bike polo, but even more so Northsides. Everyone knows who this guy was, and it's just such a sad, sad state of affairs. One thing that you can do to help out with Kevin's family is there is a GoFundMe page going on just to support his daughters as they go through life, possibly with education or maybe helping them get involved in bike and other recreational activities, just like their dad would have wanted. So that GoFundMe is linked in our Instagram bio and will stay up there for the rest of the summer. So check that out. If you have any extra funds, we really encourage you to put those funds there, because I mean, that's a worthwhile cause.
Yeah.
And there's no way to really transition from this in a smooth way. It's such a somber note, but I truly believe that Kevin, you know, would have wanted us to continue playing bike polo and grow in this community. So that's what we're going to do by, you know, discussing some of the kind of major tournaments that have gone on and some of the big results that have occurred, because those players deserve the credit. So the first one in chronological order was the Wasatch Open. Who wants to give the results for this one down in Seattle?
I'm pretty sure it was in Salt Lake City, bruh.
Oh, dang, I'm confusing it with the next one.
Yeah, oh. I'll do it, I guess. This was the third Wasatch Open. I hope I'm saying that right. Wasatch?
I think you are.
I'll go in reverse order. In third place, we had Salad All Day, Every Day, featuring Fred, Patty, Heffy, and Elijah. And then second place, Demon Farts, which is Zach, Shelly, Salem, Daniel. And then first place, we had Serenity Meow, Owen, Tyler, Andrew, and Dana. I think those are some SLC folks. That
yeah, home team taking it home. Took it down. But like this New York City team that put it all together. I mean, we heard Demon Farts talking about this on Before the Joust, that this might be a preview of an NA's team. I mean, I've heard rumors out there about Shelly wanting to play with Snake Oil too. We'll see what happens. I mean, NA's is so far away.
I mean, this is the polo gossip reincarnated hour. Rat Royals, right? Rat King, Rat Queen. I just want to call them Rat Royal. That seems like a good alliteration.
Rat sure. Royal. Okay, Gavin, you should do the next one because you actually had the city, right?
I already started. Yeah. Eco Emerald City Open, of course, in Seattle, a massive squad tournament. And
This was not squad. It was 3v3 with four players on each team.
Okay. Well, they that had sounds like squad could to me. Sub in.
Well, no, because they had different rules about subbing, right? You could only sub on dead balls.
But that's so in the NH rule set now. If the boards aren't even, squad is played, you can only sub at stoppages because it's an unfair advantage to have one door at center court and one door in the corner or something like that. Anyways, let's get to the results. Third place, we had Cool Moms. That was Elijah, Chris, Carol, and Arlen. Second place,
Cool
Canadian team, Mosquito, which was Will, Sean, Darren, and Danielle. And then in first place, Mucho, which was Josh, Pete, Diego, and Jen. Really an amazing tournament. I got to watch the final stretch through various live streams. Yeah. And the level of play was high, and it was exciting to watch.
Shout it was extra Neil exciting and- to watch because I had a bet going with Pete from the Before the Joust podcast that they would not win and that Mosquito would beat them in the final. And it went to overtime. And I ended up having to pay Pete because they sealed the deal in overtime. Pete,
how much?
You know,
how much you
inside
bet?
Inside betting? Like they scored the overtime winner. Like how was that fair? They put money on themselves. They knew. How much? They knew it was in their hand all along. Oh, it was like $20.
Damn, Canadian?
Nice. US? No, American. So actually,
damn, that's like $100 Canadian dollars.
Yeah,
it's like $100.
Just getting
$20 freedom dollars. Yeah, we had Dames, which just wrapped up this last weekend, I believe, in Anchorage. We had in third place, Pacific Puff Daddies, Jen, Krista, Nikki from Seattle, and Kate. And then second place, we had Thirst Trap, which was Manu, Rachel, and Sarah. And then in first place, we had Snow Chicken featuring Dev, Nikki from Van, Diana, and Sam. Hey-o. Shout out to all them teams.
I think it's pronounced Deanna.
Oh,
from Mexico City.
Oh, my bad.
But that's okay. Don't worry about it. That's just how it's written.
None of the cities are written here except for Nikki from Van and Nikki from Seattle to distinguish the two Nikkis.
Yeah.
Shout out Nikki from Van.
Yeah. Canadian took it down.
And those are the big tournaments that have happened.
The majors, right?
You know, the majors. Yeah. You know, I mean, we got a major 2v2 tournament coming up in Montreal. There's still room, I think, if you want to come and I actually, for the first time, went by and looked at the court area, like where
we're
gonna
play.
Yeah, how big is it? It's small. Like the courts are very small, but it's a very fun, it's a nice park and the boards are like kind of low, like they're concrete boards, super low. So you can see all the action. It's going to be really fun, I think, because there'll be polo, obviously 2-on-2, but it'll be a nice community vibe. Hopefully the weather will be nice and you should come up to Montreal.
I mean, people should come, but I want to like put the disclose like the disclaimer out there that like y'all are playing for second place. Like I'm using this tournament to polish up on my skills before the qualifying season.
It's a different not style be any of polo
fun.
Though.
Like, there's not going to be any fun. It doesn't matter. Like you're just going to be watching okay. me put the ball in your net the whole time.
Okay.
I don't want anyone coming here with like illusions of grandeur or think they're going to have a good time. Like, you know,
throwing.
You're just going to have to lose. I'm
down.
Playing with Dan. I'm playing with Dan from Toronto. And if you don't want to lose to Dan from Toronto, then you shouldn't come to this tournament.
I want people to come because I feel like
kidding. I'm just kidding.
All the tournaments that we've had in Montreal have been in the like worst possible weather conditions. And
yeah.
Maybe they have a skewed opinion. Like we do actually have nice summers in Montreal.
And it is actually really cool. It is actually going to be so fun. And like, yeah. I'm so excited for the level. Like I think this tournament, especially cause it's 2v2, like first of all, nobody knows what a 2v2 tournament's going to look like. Cause we've never done one before.
Yeah. It's a twist on an old,
it might
classic.
Be a little weird. It might be, you know, I'm sure it won't be as dynamic as 3v3, but 2v2 on the small court, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you're taking it too seriously, I think you're doing it wrong. So disregard everything I said before, but
yeah, right. We all know that's what you really, how you really feel. You know what I mean?
I really like, just want to win.
He's humbling right now, but he really wants to win. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to win as long as you don't act like an asshole along the way. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's too late for that.
Absolutely. Okay, our last piece of news is that the rules voting is going on right now. I hope we get this out before it closes. But talk to your club rep because they have the link and they vote for your club as a whole. It's pretty generous of NAH to give, you know, these smaller clubs the same amount of voting power as some of the larger clubs. But I mean, smaller clubs, use it to your advantage. Get your votes in because you have a lot of power in this. So
one person, one vote.
Yeah. And
reps, representation.
It's not one. Well, yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, yeah, we kind of had a bit of a vocal discussion online. I'm not thrilled with the mechanics of this vote. Like, I think the fact that non-cast ballots count as unequivocal yeses, I think is kind of nonsense. But, you know, NAH, like, in all seriousness, it's a volunteer organization, and they genuinely do the best they can, and they have the best interest of polo at heart. So, you know, we can gripe about minor things all we want, and at the end of the day, like, I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm tired of hearing everyone bicker about these rules. I strongly disagree with most of the changes, but if the vote goes yes, then that's going to be the game we play, and I'm going to move on and do my best at that game.
This is where I've decided to come down on it too. I'm like kind of tired about talking about it and explaining it to people who don't understand or don't want to read the rules. So I'm just like, let's just have this vote. Let's settle it and just agree to move forward with whatever passes and just be fine with that because the game's still going to be fun either way.
Yeah. But if they pass the hooking vote, like, oh man, I'm going to be throwing some big checks.
Oh my God.
if we're not allowed, you know, if we're keeping checking in and we're saying that hooking is the problem, I strongly disagree, and I will use these shoulders to prove that point.
But Alex, you're losing all this weight. For those people who don't know, Alex has lost like 20 pounds recently. You're losing all this weight, and then you're going to start throwing checks again all of a sudden. What? It seems like you're working backwards.
I mean, even 20 pounds less than I was at the start of the year, I think I'm still about 100 pounds more than the average polo player. So now, hopefully, I'll just be able to keep
myself. Polo player weighs like 90 pounds or something like that. You know?
I think I'm down to like 215 now.
Okay.
So
I think the average polo player may weigh a little in excess of 115.
Okay. But I think I'll still have the weight advantage on most people.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Let's get to the main topic here. And that is partly what is to blame for the lack of episodes podcast coming out, I'd say.
Don't put
I'd
that
say
bad partly. Juju on me.
Well, no, it's not just you. It's me too. And just like being busy with this other bike polo project, which is some people have probably found the Instagram page. I've seen the followers slowly ticking up. That is Connect Bike Polo. If you're wondering who that is, it's a project
Surprise.
That Alex and I have been working on behind the scenes. I'm going to say mostly Alex, to be fair, although it was my idea, but
no, it's a team effort. And to be clear, like we talked to Liam, we did talk to you about it at the beginning. We're not just throwing it.
Like,
we were just like
nothing to do with this.
this wasn't the, we're not trying to like kick Liam out, you know, this, no. originally
I've
started
got enough
podcast
going
project.
On. I don't need another bike polo thing going on. But
so, oh, go ahead.
No, you should explain it.
I was just going to say, I was just going to throw it to Alex to just give a little brief explanation of what Connect Bike Polo is and kind of what's the mission here.
I mean, the main idea for Connect Bike Polo is just to have it. It's to have a YouTube channel or to have a place for us to, for what am I trying to say here? It's a place for people to go to watch bike polo videos is what it comes down to. We're trying to create a platform, a channel. You can probably tell based on this podcast that we're not social media experts. Fortunately, my partner is. So this is kind of me just like picking her brain about what we should do to make the network better or to make a channel better. But the main thing is like, we just want a place that people can go and watch bike polo videos. Because if you look back at Worlds in the past, like Worlds has almost always had pretty good video coverage, but it's been quite varied. Like I think the high point for me was really the Lexington Worlds in 2017. There was multiple camera coverage, live broadcast, like that was really good, but that comes with a huge amount of logistical challenges and cost associated with being able to do a broadcast like that. There's a reason we don't see that for all of our regular tournaments, but if we're not live, like if we're just recording on cameras, and I do video professionally, so I own most of the equipment, like everything that's been used for Connect so far, it's just the stuff that I own. You know, I kind of saw that we could use this to make better than what we were getting currently polo videos, and I really want to try to make that sustainable.
Right, absolutely. I just remember so much, like kind of where the inspiration from this comes from is the impact that like the Worlds videos had on Alex and I when we started, because we were pretty lucky. We got to watch Timaru Worlds, which had great coverage. Then we got to watch the Kentucky Lexington Worlds that had great coverage. And this really inspired us to like emulate some of these players, watch their moves. I remember just clicking back and watching, like, I'm a lefty, so like Sean Marsh, some of the moves he would make, and just going to the tennis court and trying to emulate that. And it has a massive impact, video does, on new players and on growing our community and answering that question, like, what is bike polo in a good way?
Yeah. Well, the perfect example is, Gavin, when we started Bike Polo Ottawa, like, I love Bike Polo Ottawa, but it was not a club that I would have, the first year we joined, felt like this is what I want to do and make the kind of commitment that we did to it. But a big part of the commitment we made came from the fact that we stumbled upon Mr. Dew's video channel very early on. And so we spent all winter watching this like archive of years of bike polo tournaments. So we knew that bike polo was more than just the Ottawa club. We knew, we had a good sense of like what this community was beyond what, you know, our local club was able to communicate to us on rookie night. And I think we should try to do that for, you know, we should be, if people are going to all the effort to be this good at tournaments and this good at bike polo, like we can bring a camera, record it, and get it online in a format that hopefully other people can see and be inspired by too.
Absolutely. And I think for me, a big point where I've noticed this vacuum and this need for this is just watching some of the tournaments recently, like the Eco tournament in Seattle. I'm watching the live stream, but I can only watch the live stream because I follow, you know, three really key Instagram accounts, and I have to flip between the three of them and turn my screen sideways to be able to watch these games properly. And it's just like no beginner player is going to know all these accounts and be able to flip back and forth between them as they die and go up and die and go up effectively.
Which is not to criticize people that live stream tournaments. Thank you so much.
No, yeah. I mean,
I would way rather be watching the live stream than have nothing. But it is like you compare that to the 2017 Worlds coverage, and it's like I can show people that Worlds coverage that know nothing about bike polo, and they're like, oh, this is a sport. This is a thing. Like, I understand why you put this effort into it. And it almost doesn't matter how good an Instagram live stream will be. It's like the action becomes harder to digest.
Right. So, Alex, how are we making this more accessible to smaller tournaments if they want to get coverage? Like, what are we doing that's a little different than what's been done before?
So the biggest thing that we're not trying to do is we're not trying to do it live. Doing something live means you're inevitably gated by the internet connection and your ability to broadcast. And I can do live events, like I do that professionally, but logistically traveling and setting that stuff up and getting it to work consistently requires, it's way more than like I can handle at a polo tournament, just on my own. So not trying to be live means we can get away with way more. Like we can just kind of bring one or two cameras, set them up, record to the camera, and then hopefully the week after the tournament, we can put everything together. Obviously the two tournaments that I've done so far where we've brought the cameras and actually done this for were in April, and it's been considerably more than 2 weeks, but that has more to do with figuring everything out and setting it up and figuring logistical challenges out and stuff. I think in the future, we'll be able to do probably 1 to 2 week turnaround on most of these videos.
That would be amazing, but it is like a buttload of work and pretty expensive for you to set up. So why don't you just give a bit of like background as to like how much effort and time you're putting into it and like some of the expenses?
You know, I'm kind of deliberately not tracking how much time I put into it at this point. Part of it is I'm using it as an excuse to like try new stuff for video things. But as far as the polo specific expenses go, like all the equipment is the most expensive thing, but I own the equipment for my work. So the only real cost is that I'm not able to take jobs or rent it out if I'm bringing it to a polo tournament, but I'm more than happy to do that. You know, like I want to use it to do all this stuff. And I'm constantly buying new things like 360 cameras and the cable to be able to like move the 360 camera on the cable. I'm doing that and I'm buying that for bike polo, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, maybe I can, you know, justify it as professional video stuff, though I have never, ever come up on a situation I could do that in a professional capacity. Yet.
And it does take a lot of hours. Alex is being pretty modest here and maybe he's a little embarrassed by how many hours it's taken him, but it's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. Flying to tournaments, obviously expensive, but I think the hope is to get this to a place where perhaps we can make it a little sustainable and cover multiple tournaments a year, at least those major tournaments that people want to watch.
I mean, in my mind, even if like, I don't know how many tournaments a year Mr. Dew did, but even if we're covering 2 or 3 tournaments a year, I would love to have 2 or 3 tournaments a year to watch. Like during the pandemic, I was watching so many videos of bike polo, and like the Cordoba bike polo channel was amazing to be able to watch games from 2019, and like having, you know, NAH's channel. Like there's a lot of channels out there now that are putting up bike polo videos and bike polo content, and I love that. But I wish, you know, you almost never see like full tournament coverage of more than or like full game coverage of more than like one event a year.
Absolutely. And so this is a way we can make that happen. Yeah. And demonstrate, you know, some of these amazing athletes that bike polo has, because they exist. I mean, there are players out there that are just naturally talented and also put in the work. And I think they deserve a bit of recognition. And this Absolutely. Is a way for them to get that.
I think of if you look at the level of play and the level that people are doing right now, I want to have a platform for them to be able to show sponsors. Like, it's crazy to me that if Chris Hammersley wanted new brakes, he should be able to show, you know, Avid or some brake company and be like, hey, I'm an incredibly notable brand. Like, you could argue that Chris popularized the T1. How many T1s do you think were sold because Chris played on it for so long?
Well, Birdie did it first.
Birdie did do it first. But this is the sort of thing where it's like that. I know the secondary market for Trek is not significant, and we're not talking about particularly large stats, but you know, we've seen even through this podcast that there is a real audience out there, and it is something that some of these smaller cycling brands probably would be willing to help support or to offset costs or to send some of the more notable players, you know, send them some equipment or stuff. Like I want bike polo to be able to have that success that other, I think, way less cool sports have.
Absolutely.
I think we just need the platform for it.
The players are good enough. They've put in the hours. I think they deserve some of that recognition, and maybe to just make playing a little bit cheaper for them would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that struck me too was I had a coworker come down to Fresno with me to help me film, which was amazing because for the first time ever, I was able to watch like my games got recorded. Usually I'm the one recording the games. So he made a point of recording most of my games, which was awful because I don't like watching myself play, but it was very educational watching myself make lots of mistakes. But he went down to watch this tournament, didn't really know anything about bike polo, and he was struck by how elite and incredible the skill level was. Like, he just had no idea. I kept trying to tell him, like, they're really good. Like, you think I'm good, but compared to me, like, there are players out there that are really, really good, and the teamwork is there, and it's crazy. And he got to see that firsthand, and he's like, I can't believe that this isn't like a professional, like, on television. He's like, I can't believe that there's all these players that are this good, that travel, that put these events on, and there's not even like, you know, it isn't just like a huge media thing, and that they aren't sponsored. And I'm like, well, there's cultural reasons for that, and I think we want to keep things independent, but at the same time, I do want to make sure that there's a platform for people to actually see and experience how awesome bike polo is.
So we're giving it our best shot. We're going to try to do that. And the good thing is that if you're listening to this podcast, that means that the trailer for the Smack in the Middle videos is probably live right now. And if it isn't, we apologize, but it probably is. So check out the YouTube channel, Connect Bike Polo. Check out the Instagram page. I think we're going to post it there too. Connect Bike Polo. Follow us there. And Liam actually is a lucky son of a, because he got some sneak peeks so he can give an honest and unbiased review. So we sent him the trailer as well as one game. And I think it was one of Alex's games.
It was one of Alex's games.
So what were your thoughts? Build the hype.
Well, aside from the glaring errors in Alex's game, the footage was incredible. I'm just joking. Yeah, it was very, very high caliber. I mean, Alex, as a friend and co-host, I've come to his videos, I've come to expect greatness, and this surpassed my expectations greatly, I will say. And it's just super slick, super well. I was like amazed at some of the, like, I think I was like, how did you get this angle, like the top down? I guess you had a drone or something. Yeah, flying down.
Yeah, I was just like, so for Fresno, I gotta put the caveat, like, my coworker and friend that came with me to Fresno is a drone operator that does all the, like, travel tourism stuff. Like, you know, in Canada, we get a lot of, like, Tourism Ontario or, like, Travel Newfoundland or whatever. He's the guy that shoots all that, and he brought that drone to Fresno. So we had, like, unbelievably good drone footage in Fresno. I don't know that we're going to be able to recreate that because he moved to Australia. So Australia bike polo, you know, get this guy to come out to your events. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'll put it on the Jomez Pro tier of coverage. I feel like, yes, Gavin, knowing you, this is sort of maybe was the inspiration
behind Connect.
Like, it's definitely very nice, very slick, and I'm excited to see the other games, honestly, because it's like, yeah, it's compelling. It's great. Just throw on a game and you can watch. It's very watchable. And I got the one I watched was from Smack in the Middle. I don't know, do Pedal Junkies do all the play by play?
Just that a was few also games, a couple okay. games.
Yeah, that was a highlight for me.
We reached out to a couple. We reached out to a lot of different people to help do the play-by-play.
Yeah.
Pedal Junkies, shout out. They did an awesome job with theirs.
Yeah, I enjoyed the play-by-play from T and Sara. And I'm very excited to see what you. I've like clearly, I have put a lot of work into it. Maybe Alex more than Gavin. But
no, I mean,
Gavin, it definitely shows off. It shows off.
This was definitely Gavin's idea, and like Jomez Pro was a big inspiration behind it, and I had no idea what that was. So yeah, like a lot of this does fall on Gavin.
For those that don't know, it's like I feel like they got bought by ESPN or something.
No, is that I think right? that or no? The licenses for the events got bought by ESPN. Yeah. Oh, okay, so they're actually covering less events now.
Yeah, they were the original like pro disc golf footage. Live coverage team.
Their model was definitely an inspiration because, I mean, during the pandemic, disc golf exploded. And Jomez Pro had a massive role to play in that because people could watch the best in the world play week after week after week. And they produce none of it live, which makes the product way cheaper to make and way higher quality. And honestly, bike polo is probably easier to film than
disc golf. Oh, it's so much easier to film. Like, you were showing me the Jomez Pro stuff, and I'm like, they have to cover every hole. And they have to figure out like different flight paths and things. Like bike polo, it's one court. You got to cover the court. The nets don't move. All the action and goals is going to happen around the nets.
Yeah, it's definitely a model we can take and use. for sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's inspired me to start my own channel of a sport I'm also really passionate about, which is pickleball. So I've already registered. Oh, yeah. I've registered Connect Pickleball. I mean, bike pole is just the beginning, right? This was your plan all along. We're going to get into pickleball.
Pickleball is where the money pickleball is at. Rich.
Yeah.
The pickle, what was it from that video? The pickle everywhere, the P network from the pickle Grand Rapids. Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, pickleball, that's where the money is for sure. So Connect Bike Polo, connecting you with bike polo everywhere. Just check it out. Enjoy it. Help us. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh, I did also want to address, you'll notice absolutely shameless plugs within Connect Bike Polo. We did set up a Patreon for it. Right. Gavin, can you talk a little bit about the decision to do that?
Yeah. So like we said, we want to cover multiple tournaments a year, and this is expensive as well as, well, not as expensive as live coverage, but medium expensive. There are some expenses, and it does take a lot of Alex's time to do this that he could be working otherwise. So to make this sustainable, I mean, we had to come up with some kind of revenue stream so that, you know, it wasn't just going to be thousands of dollars out of Alex's and my pocket, because then it wouldn't be sustainable.
Well, and just to be clear, I'm happy to spend thousands of dollars out of my pocket. It's just we're not going to get multiple tournaments a year if we have to pay for everything on our own.
Exactly. Maybe one a year if that's the case.
I'll do as much as I can. Like that's where I'm at, but.
So you know, if this is something that you enjoy and you want to see more of, you know, the more Patreons we have there, the more we can offset some of those costs, which means that Alex can fly to more tournaments, record more video, edit more video,
or drive
if that's close enough on the East Coast, maybe. But it just makes it more likely that we can make more videos like this more frequently. So if it's something you want to see more of and you kind of believe in the mission that we've set forth during this podcast, like check out the Connect Bike Polo Patreon page. It's not too pricey. It's all in Canadian dollars, and you're charged by the tournament we cover. So if there's not any footage coming out, you're not going to be getting monthly dings on your credit card because of it. We put out a video on our Patreon and that charges people. And we do that every time we do a new tournament. We cover a new tournament. So
it's kind of cool. A big point is like, we're going to be releasing these videos for free. They're going to go on YouTube. Nothing's going to be behind the paywall. The purpose of the videos is for potential new players to find it and get excited and to keep old players excited. Like I don't think putting videos behind the paywall is a good idea.
Yeah.
But if you do join the Patreon, we're also going to be putting out highlight videos from every tournament, and we want to make sure we're giving back to the people that are helping to support the channel. So there is going to be a private Discord for those that donate to the channel where we can debate and, well, you can discuss, you know, whatever bike polo you want, but also there will be a specific top 10 discussion for like making a top 10 plays list from the tournaments that we cover. And if if you're a diehard fan and you're going to support everything, you probably also have opinions on what the best play from a tournament is going to be. And you can put it in there and get to vote if you're supporting.
Help us make some of those cool highlight videos like we did.
But really, it's just you're helping us offset the cost. That is like, I don't want, you know, we're not like selling you a vote or anything like that. This is the main purpose of the thing is to help offset the cost. And I think the main reason we're using a service like Patreon is just that it keeps it a lot more, it's a lot less time consuming and a lot cleaner for us to be able to do. Realistically, I think it's the time consuming nature of a project like this that's actually the biggest limiting factor. So I know I talked to some people about it and they're saying, oh, we can just Venmo you. Well, Venmo doesn't exist in Canada, first of all, so you can't. But there are other online like e-transfer stuff we can do. But it's just as far as like logistically figuring everything out in a way that, because I technically run my own business, like if I just had all this money coming through PayPal, it gets really complicated. I get into hot water with the government real fast because that's also how people pay me for my videos a lot of the time for like my professional work, and keeping all that stuff separate. Patreon is, yes, they take a small cut, but it's a lot more elegant for us to be able, it just makes it a lot more like feasible for us to do.
Right.
We did look into other options. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Any last thoughts, Alex, Liam, before we move on to, you know, that final segment of the show?
I just really wanted to say one of the biggest things that I'm hoping with this is that it can make the action understandable and accessible, because a lot of times people watch bike polo and they're like, this is cool, but I don't understand why players are like this, or I don't understand this aspect of the rules or that aspect of the rules. And so I really hope that we're able to take, you know, there's going to be other benefits from this footage, not just the game coverage. We can do sort of, well, we're going to have a bit of an archive to be able to do rules breakdowns, showing like different cases of, is this obstruction? Is this not, you know, with the new NAH vote coming up, like there's going to be, I think there's a need to clarify what kind of mallet on mallet contact is or isn't allowed, whether these votes pass or not. Cause I've heard some people saying things like, we need to ban this. And I'm like, that's already banned. Like, you can't do that. And I've heard other people saying, you know, and especially if the new rule passes, like we're going to need to clarify what is and isn't allowed too. And now we have a big body of, you know, slow motion video to pull from.
Yeah, that's going to be a big plus. And, you know, those videos are going to be exciting and cool content to come out. And like Alex said, all the content is going to be free. None of the content is going to be behind the paywall, only the Discord channel. So, yeah.
Oh, and if you're organizing a tournament and you really want us to come, let's talk, because we want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
yeah,
we'd love to go do that.
I know in the past, I know my understanding was that Mr. Dew had his costs subsidized through like tournaments a lot of the time, like through reg fees and things. And that's another option that we can definitely look at moving forward. But just to get things started, like obviously with Connect and everything right now, we're just paying out of pocket for it.
Yeah, which is fine for now.
Okay. That's what I want. I mean, I want this badly enough that I'm willing to pay for it and volunteer my time.
There you go. Should we do the mailbag? Liam, you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
His name is mail spelled backwards.
Yo, I never knew that. Someone actually messaged, I think Tim from Detroit messaged me that the other day. And I was like, whoa, I have no idea. But that makes sense that I do the mailbag, right?
How did you not know that before? Okay, never mind.
Okay, let's get to it. Mailbag. We got an email from Arnold from Salt Lake City. He writes, hey, y'all, hope everyone is well. Salem has the trophy in NYC. Reigning champs, the meteor from the movie Armageddon, Patty, Salem, John Baluch, Alan, and myself. Stoked to hear that fall ballin is potentially happening. Getting back to Toronto would be really sweet. Best, Arnold. Yeah, that's right. I was asking who had the trophy with the, hopefully a little bit of hair attached to the squirrel from fall ballin.
Well, it's good to know where the trophy is, but the bad news is I don't actually think fall ballin is going to happen this year.
Wah, wah. Wah, wah. Surprise. Yeah. The world is shocked. Well, that's good because I think we're playing a little something in the fall for Montreal. So stay tuned for that. Won't be fall ballin'.
Poutine.
Yeah, it might be a little poutine flavor. So yeah, cool. Thank you, Arnold, as always. Pleasure to hear from you. And then we got two emails.
See you in Montreal.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks.
Oh, that's right. Shelly and Arnold are coming up.
Yeah.
2v2. Sick. And we got two emails from Joshua. Joshua K, no city affiliation provided. Is that true?
Yeah, there was nothing in the email and I couldn't figure it out. So we're sorry, Joshua. Next time when you email in,
tell us where you're from.
Yeah, yeah.
The real question is which one of us knows Joshua and who really dropped the ball. I have a terrible feeling this might be Josh from Buffalo that I've played with, in which case it's me that dropped the ball because I should know, but... Maybe it's Gavin. Maybe Gavin met Josh. And
well, we're going to read their question anyway. He writes, hi, y'all. What do you think about shot clocks for polo? I played a tourney recently and got to the final, and as soon as the other team got a point ahead...
Oh, I know who it is.
Oh, it's Josh from...
Was from this your Mitchell? Team?
Spoiler.
Ah, okay. Was this your team... okay, never mind that he's writing about. Okay.
Pretty sure this is Josh that played with Mucho from Eco.
That means it's Josh from Eco. Portland, right?
I assume that.
Played a tourney... Okay, I'll get back to the question. Played a tourney recently and got to the final. As soon as the other team got a point ahead, they just dropped past in circles on their side of the court. I was upset, not because it made it harder for my team to get possession, but because I feel like it made it a very boring final for everyone to watch. It was also boring to play, which sucks too. Another scenario I ran into at pickup, there was a guy going up the boards with the ball, and so I was going to go cut them off and steal the ball like you do. Instead, their teammate got into that position before I could get there, and they just rode with a constant velocity beside each other down the boards. It seemed to be interference to me because the outside player basically denied anyone else a path to playing the ball. If you cut them both off, you would have been interfering with the outside guy and could get called on that since they weren't playing the ball. I don't know. What do you guys think about something like this? Obviously, it wasn't very tactical, but it's hard to tell whether it'd be legal or not. Thanks, Joshua. Well, we'll get to second question first, but we'll do this one and then we'll do the next part. So what do you think?
Shot clock first?
Yeah, let's talk shot clock first.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think logistically, a shot clock is too complicated for bike polo. I just don't, you know, they can barely make it work in the NBA. Like, there's so many times they just mess up the mechanics of actually turning the clock on and off in the NBA with so many people. And being able to get the clock's time so that the players can actually see it and, like, you know, the clock is on, like, it is a big challenge. However, watching, you know, it sucks when one team is up and there's like 2 minutes left and they just hold on to the ball and don't even try to make a play anymore. Like, I absolutely think there needs to be some kind of rule to prevent that sort of thing from happening.
Yeah, I thought a lot about this because bike polo, like basketball, is a game that if you have possession of the ball and you're a strong ball handler, you can probably just keep the ball away from a single defender for as long as you want using your body position. They bring a double in bike polo. I mean, that's dangerous because then you have a pass to a breakaway, right? So it makes sense for teams when they have even a 1 point lead to hold the ball and bait the other team into double teaming so they can get a good opportunity to score. And that's a massive dynamic in bike polo. Getting the early lead is a huge advantage. What I would like to see instead of a shot clock, because I spent some time thinking about this, is a rule that if none of the defenders are in your half and you have the ball, you have like 7 seconds to get it across half line. Now, can you go back into your own half if you want? Yeah, I guess you would have to. It's not a perfect rule. I had to think a bit more about how that would work. But something like get it across half and play it in the zone if none of the defense is there in a certain time period.
Even if it was more than, like 7 seconds, even if you started counting from 20, it's like you just, if there's no defenders in your half, you have to take it out. And I think you could have something like in basketball, there's an over and back rule. Like once you enter the other team's half, you can't pass it back to yourself. If they push it back, you can. And I think a big part of what really kills the tempo in bike polo is just when teams reset endlessly back to their own side. I would be okay with saying, like, once you cross half with the ball, you can't just reset past half.
I think we might need like a blue line or something like that. Yeah. Like maybe a two-thirds court where you can reset. Like, you have to get across half initially, but you can then retreat past the two-thirds, like past half to the two-thirds line. So there are still reset options, but they're not reset options that are going all the way back behind your net. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that might be helpful. Just make the space a little smaller, make it a little easier to challenge and get people into corners and stuff like that. Could be good.
Yeah. And part of it too, like, I know some people would say, like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't come up that often. But I think
comes up in every tournament I play, that's for sure.
It actually does come up a little bit. And I don't like being in a position in a tournament where, let's say, we're holding on to a 1 point lead. I don't like having to make the choice of, like, do I choose to take a terrible shot, or like, it's like, do I want to keep playing the game the way I know it should be played, or should I just try and be smart about it? Because especially if we're talking like a really big, meaningful game that we're up by one, it's so tempting. And I also feel like maybe I should just try to hold on to it. Like, if I really respect the other team and I think they're maybe better than me, like, I don't know if I can just hold on to it. But I also don't think that's what the game should come down to.
Yeah.
So I wish there was some rule in place that was like, okay, I'm going to bring it across half and then we're going to try to be smart with our possession, or just something that sped the game up a little bit more. Cause it sucks watching, you know, we have such talented players, and like Mosquito are really good at holding onto the ball when they have a lead. And like, I like watching Mosquito play. They're very dynamic when they choose to be, but when they have a 1 point lead and there's like 2 minutes left, Sean Marsh is very good at just holding onto the ball in a corner, and it's not very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As far as the second part of this email, the interference thing, I am willing to bet money that this was interference.
It sounds like
really? I was going to bet money it's not.
Sounds because like a classic screen.
If the person's going up the boards and then their player is like, oh, if I take this line, I can block them. then they're turning or at least starting to move in a way that facilitates that block. And in my opinion, that is interference. If they were already rolling that direction and then the person with the ball was like, hey, this person's already rolling that direction, I can get behind them and use them as a screen, that's not interference. But because the player initiated that screen after noticing where the ball carrier's path was, I guaranteed they sped up or turned in a way that made it interference. And that is, you know, a purposeful action to cause an impediment.
I think you have to kind of break it down, because I think that, just to clarify, if you're making a play to try to block the person with the ball, it's just not interference. That's defense. You're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So like, as the defender, if the player with the ball is carrying the ball up the boards, you're allowed to just get in their way.
Yeah.
To me, this question was saying, if they have a teammate that doesn't have the ball riding beside them, technically you could argue.
Oh, that, Alex, well, I think you're confusing what I'm saying. I said that I believe the player on the team of the person with the ball who was blocking, I'd say 99% chance they committed interference here.
I mean, no, but if they're riding beside, like, Gavin, if you enter the zone and I'm riding beside you, that's not interference. It means that I'm occupying space that the defense can't get into. Yes, but it's not interference if they're just riding beside
the player. You need to look prior to that, though. You have to rewind a little bit and look to, like, who was riding first in that direction. Was it the person without the ball who was like taking a line, like maybe a lead stretch pass line, a slow one, and then the person with the ball came up beside them? Or was it the person who had the ball was going on that line and the person without the ball was like, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get in the way of a defender, and turned into it? Because that's interference.
But it's a very proactive, like, interference. It's not interference if you're doing it proactively, right? So like, if you're
If you're making a change of speed, or
it's sudden change
control,
of speed direction,
yeah, to
get in and to block someone off the ball. If I'm
doesn't matter how far away they are or when it's going to happen. If you're making that play to do it, it doesn't state how long, like, it doesn't matter if 5 seconds have passed before they get close enough for it actually to be an impediment. You made that turn to impede
but
someone.
If I change my speed and direction 5 seconds before it becomes relevant, then it's not sudden. You're allowed to move
at the moment you made the change. It was sudden.
I feel like,
sure,
I'm watching,
but like,
first
if I make the
right
change
now.
Like, if in the situation I'm picturing is actually a textbook example of legal interference, like, where you're allowed, it's like a legal, it's a great legal screen, because like, if we come up the boards together and I don't have the ball and you're riding beside me and I'm not changing my speed and direction, that's a perfectly legal screen in bike polo.
Now, Skip.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I think it really depends on who initiates that move along the boards first.
It does. It really comes down to the execution, and it's hard to say with this is why having Connect Bike Polo is going to be great, because we can look at specific instances of, like, see how this person isn't moving, and then it's like, this is a great legal screen, or see how they turn their handlebars and deliberately got in their way. That makes it,
or
not
press
a legal
their brakes.
Screen.
That's the one that I think is the most common, like, that doesn't get called by refs, is when a player purposely slows down to create a screen. And that's a sudden change of direction. You're slowing down, speed or direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Velocity, I mean, it has to have a direction.
It really does sound unsatisfying. Though what I would say is, if I'm playing defense on this particular play, I would just take a hard line at the player with the ball. And if the other player, because you're there first, right? You, presumably as the defender, if you're Joshua, you're between the net and the ball carrier. You stay between the net and the ball carrier. And if that screen crashes into you, that is a foul on them. And if the ball carrier crashes into you, that is a foul on them. So just hold the line and stay between the net and the ball carrier. And if you're not between the net and the ball carrier, then, like, you already got beat. That's kind of on you.
I kind of look at this as not a super effective play, because I mean, this screener is probably in the way of the shot.
Yeah.
So if I just put myself between the net and the ball, and the screener is putting themselves between me and the player with the ball, then there's now another bike in between that player and the net. So I'm not that worried about it, to be honest.
All right. Well, we settled that. The second email from Joshua, I will read. It goes, yo, I just listened to episode 41, Smack in the Thaw Ass Scoop, spring tournament recap. At the end, you guys talk about stretching. We should do stretching, and stretching is important for reducing injury. Not sure about it relieving soreness, but the general guidelines are as follows. Don't stretch cold, mean You should do a warm-up prior to stretching and only stretch the muscles you have warmed up. Stretch before and after your exercise activity. Stretches should be prolonged, usually 60 seconds on each stretch. It's going to be broken up into two 30-second stretches, four 15-second stretches. The longer you can stretch, the better. Do not bounce the stretches. That can cause injury. Typically, do these only as prescribed by a physical therapist. Evidence has shown ballistic stretching, that's a cool term, to be beneficial for things like plantar fasciitis, but when performed incorrectly can often lead to tendonitis, strains, and pulled muscles. Do not stretch to the point of intense pain just until you start to feel the stretch occurring. This is not a flexibility competition. Older people benefit more from stretching. That's about it. Used to be involved in a lot of sports, and stretching was always taken very seriously. Also, our bike polo subreddit has a Discord. I'm very fond of moving off Facebook and onto Discord. Maybe we can put a link to that in the in our link tree. Regards, Joshua.
So first, stretching. I'm going to say, definitely check out this bike polo Discord thing. That sounds awesome. Second thing I'm going to say is I completely disagree with Josh.
Yeah,
about stretching. I think possibly
how can you
one
hate
of the
on
things,
stretching?
I think one of the worst things you can do before a sport is stand there and stretch your hamstring for 60 seconds and just elongate it, like, and stress it out before you even play the game. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of sports at a high level, university, varsity sports.
I don't think
sports.
That's what they're saying, though.
Well, he says right here, like, stretches
don't
should
stretch
be prolonged,
core.
Usually 60 seconds on each stretch. And I just
no,
think
but they're
that's
broken,
wrong.
That, it's broken up into smaller stretches.
I don't know.
I don't think you can disagree with this.
I definitely can disagree with this.
Well, you're wrong.
I don't
know.
All right. I don't think Joshua is advocating that you do 60 second holds before you play games. I think like stretching is an important part of any physical activity, but the same way that like what you do before you're trying to do a peak performance, like peak intensity, isn't the same thing as what you're like the way we train for a sport isn't the same thing that we do while we're doing the sport. So like, I think holding, my understanding is some stretches, like holding it for 60 seconds like that can improve long-term flexibility, but it doesn't, it actually comes at the cost of short-term flexibility. So like you wouldn't do that before your match, but it can be an important part of training.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying, Alex. I think like mobility work and stretching are super important as part of your training routine to reduce injuries. But doing them before a game isn't necessarily what's best. I think a warm-up is super important. Like get those joints lubricated, move them around, get your heart rate going, start sweating, maybe do some high knees or something like that. But like doing prolonged, like that classic, like everyone's standing in a circle, like everyone touch your toes, everyone's bend to the side. like this is not like, no varsity coach is going to have you do that anymore.
No. The other thing I'd say is like, I actually disagree, not to be confrontational with Joshua, but I think this could be what works really well for them, right? And I've actually gone on a pretty deep dive this summer about trying to how I can improve my training. And there's actually, especially within cycling, unbelievably large amounts of mixed research studies and different things that suggest different outcomes. Like, I think there's clearly a benefit to stretching, but as far as figuring out the optimal way to do it, like bouncing for stretching and stuff, like bouncing for stretching is actually really, really good as a form of warm-up, depending on how you do it. And there's like, I found some things suggesting it's great and other things suggesting it's like, you know, like Josh is saying, it's injury prone. I think it really comes down to like, do what works for you. And if you're doing something crazy, like, you know, talk to a professional, like talk to your physio, do whatever. Yeah. But almost certainly some stretching, like regularly stretching at some point is probably better than just never stretching.
Super, super true. I just disagree with like these long static stretches before a game.
I wouldn't do that either.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people have their different takes on the what exactly to do, but I think we can all, yeah, we've all can agree conventional wisdom that stretching is good for you in athletic pursuits of any kind.
Well, that's a stretch.
On that note, that's the end of mailbag.
Nice. And I think we're at a good spot here to finish the episode. Any last takes people want to get off their chest before we recess?
Recess? What is this, court?
I just want to say that I think body checking should be banned in bike polo. No, I don't think we should be telling people that body
checking
is
a new
allowed.
Segment called the 60-second soapbox for Alex.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, body checking is not allowed. Don't do it. It's technically the rules say you can, but if you do it, you're just going to get a toppling penalty every time, and we should change the rules to reflect that. Thank you for listening to my soapbox.
Yeah. Okay. Valid point.
You still have 30 seconds.
I'm going to be throwing these checks to prove this point all summer.
Oh my gosh. Why would you get so many toppling calls? You're going to get kicked out of the tournament. Have you not read the, what's the rule? Like the inclining penalties, new rules that are coming into effect.
Oh God. Yeah. We'll see. I guess that means I can just play risky to begin with until I start getting into penalty trouble. But if we're talking about clean, high and even checks, like, you know, I've been told by so many people it's an essential part of the game, which I don't think it is.
You're just going to get top wing calls, Alex. The refs going to be like, I don't like that. Not in my game. And they're going to call it, which is totally within their right to do. I mean, they're.
And I think they should, because I think it's totally out of place in polo.
So why bring that to the court in the first place?
Because we got to change these rules. People think hooking is dangerous and checking isn't. And that's absurd. Gosh.
Okay, before we continue down this path any further, check out the Connect Pike Polo videos. Check out the Kevin Walsh Family GoFundMe page. It's in our bio on our link tree. And until next time, signing off, Gavin, Liam, Alex, be nice on the court. Don't just check people to prove points about rules.
And be safe on the road, guys. Yeah. It's not always in your control, but do what you can. Bye.
Peace.
Locks, where the crew, what's a boss supposed to do? Meet you on the polo court. You like YOLO, rock that sport. Take the mallet in your righty and the left squeeze breaky tighty. You all high and mighty every Thursday nighty. Wheeling, jousting 3v3. Come on, rip that PBC. Courtside, grab a brew. Let that conversation stew. Wonder where the cuckoo flew. That bird up in Hillcrest wins.